forced herself to relax a bit. "And are you thirsty?" she asked. "Or were you merely being polite?"
"I am always polite," he said with a wicked grin. "But I am thirsty as well."
Kate took one look at that grin, lethally combined with those devastating green eyes, and nearly groaned.
"You are a rake as well," she said with a sigh.
Colin choked. On what, she did not know, but he choked nonetheless.
"I beg your pardon."
Kate's face flushed, as she realized with horror that she'd spoken aloud.
"No, it is I who should beg your pardon. Please forgive me, that was unforgivably rude."
"No, no,"
he said quickly, looking terribly interested and not a little bit amused.
"Do continue."
Kate swallowed. There was really no way to get out of it now.
"I was merely..."
She cleared her throat.
"If I might be frank..."
He nodded, his sly grin telling her that he could not imagine her being anything but frank. Kate cleared her throat yet again. Really, this was getting ridiculous. She was starting to sound as if she'd swallowed a toad.
"It had occurred to me that you might be rather like your brother, that is all."
"My brother?"
"The Viscount,"
she said, thinking it must be obvious.
"I have three brothers,"
he explained.
"Oh."
Now she felt stupid.
"I'm sorry."
"I'm sorry, too,"
he said with great feeling.
"Most of the time they're a dreadful nuisance."
Kate had to cough to cover up her small gasp of surprise.
"But at least you were not comparing me to Gregory,"
he said with a dramatic sigh of relief. He shot her a cheeky, sideways look.
"He's 13.
Kate caught the smile in his eyes and realized he'd been bamming her all along. This was not a man who wished his brothers off to perdition.
"You're rather devoted to your family, aren't you?"
she asked. His eyes, which had been laughing throughout the conversation, turned dead serious without even a blink.
"Utterly."
"As am I,"
Kate said pointedly.
"And that means..."
"It means,"
she said, knowing she should hold her tongue, but speaking anyway,
"that I will not allow anyone to break my sister's heart."
Colin remained silent for a moment, slowly turning his head to watch his brother and Edwina, who were just then finishing up their dance.
"I see," he murmured.
"Do you?"
"Oh, indeed."
They arrived at the lemonade table, and he reached out and took two glasses, handing one to her. She'd already had three glasses of lemonade that evening, a fact of which she was sure Mary had been aware before she'd insisted Kate have some more. But it was hot in the ballroom. It was always hot in ballrooms, and she was thirsty again. Colin took a leisurely sip, watching her over the rim of his glass, then said,
"My brother has it in his mind to settle down this year."
Two could play at this game, Kate thought. She took a sip of her lemonade, slowly, before speaking.
"Is that so?"
"I would certainly be in a position to know."
"He is reputed to be quite a rake."
Colin looked at her assessingly.
"That is true."
"It is difficult to imagine so notorious a rogue settling down with one woman and finding happiness in marriage."
"You seem to have given such a scenario a great deal of thought, Miss Sheffield."
She levelled a frank stare directly at his face.
"Your brother is not the first man of questionable character to court my sister, Mr. Bridgerton. And I assure you, I do not take my sister's happiness lightly."
"Surely any girl would find happiness in marriage to a wealthy, entitled gentleman. Isn't that what a season in London is all about?"
"Perhaps," Kate allowed. "But I'm afraid that line of thinking does not address the true problem at hand."
"Which is?"
"Which is that a husband can break a heart with far greater intensity than a mere suitor."
She smiled, a small, knowing sort of smile, then added,
"Don't you think?"
"Having never been married, I am certainly not in a position to speculate."
"Shame, shame, Mr. Bridgerton. That was the worst sort of evasion."
"Was it? I rather thought it might be the best. I am clearly losing my touch.
That, I fear, will never be a worry.
Kate finished the rest of her lemonade. It was a small glass. Lady Hartside, their hostess, was notoriously stingy.
You are far too generous, he said.
She smiled, a real smile this time.
I am rarely accused of that, Mr. Bridgerton.
He laughed, right out loud in the middle of the ballroom. Kate realized, with discomfort, that they were suddenly the object of numerous curious stares.
You, he said, still sounding most heartily amused, must meet my brother.
The Viscount? She asked with disbelief.
Well, you might enjoy Gregory's company as well, he allowed. But as I said, he is only 13, and likely to put a frog on your chair.
And the Viscount?
Is not likely to put a frog on your chair, he said, with an utterly straight face.
How Kate managed not to laugh, she would never know. Keeping her lips completely straight and serious, she replied,
I see. He has a great deal to recommend him, then.
Colin grinned.
He's not such a bad sort.
I am much relieved. I shall begin planning the wedding breakfast immediately.
Colin's mouth fell open.
I didn't mean... You shouldn't. That is to say, such a move would be premature.
Kate took pity on him and said,
I was joking.
His face flushed slightly.
Of course.
Now, if you'll excuse me, I must make my farewell.
He raised a brow.
Not leaving so early, are you, Miss Sheffield?
Not at all.
But she wasn't about to tell him she had to go relieve herself. Four glasses of lemonade tended to do that to a body.
I promised a friend I would meet her for a moment.
It has been a pleasure.
He executed a smart bow.
May I see you to your destination?
No, thank you. I shall be quite all right on my own.
And with a smile over her shoulder, she made her retreat from the ballroom. Colin Bridgerton watched her go with a thoughtful expression, then made his way to his older brother, who was leaning against a wall, arms crossed in an almost belligerent manner.
Anthony!
He called out, slapping his brother on the back.
How was your dance with the lovely Miss Sheffield? She'll do,
was Antony's terse reply. They both knew what that meant.
Really?
Colin's lips twitched ever so slightly.
You should meet the sister, then.
I beg your pardon?
Her sister,
Colin repeated, starting to laugh.
You simply must meet her sister.
20 minutes later, Antony was confident he'd gotten the whole story on Edwina Sheffield from Colin, and it seemed that the road to Edwina's heart and hand in marriage lay squarely through her sister. Edwina Sheffield, apparently, would not marry without the approval of her older sister. According to Colin, this was common knowledge, and had been for at least a week, ever since Edwina had made an announcement to this effect at the annual Smythe Smith Musicale. The Bridgerton brothers had all missed this momentous statement, as they avoided Smythe Smith musicals like the plague, as did anyone with any affection for Bach, Mozart, or music in any form. Edwina's older sister, one Catherine Sheffield, more commonly known as Kate, was also making her debut this year, even though she was reputed to be at least 21. Such timing led Antony to believe that the Sheffields must be among the less wealthy ranks of the ton, a fact which suited him nicely. He had no need of a bride with a great dowry, and a bride without one might have more need of him. Antony believed in using all of his advantages. Unlike Edwina, the elder Miss Sheffield had not immediately taken the ton by storm. According to Colin, she was generally well-liked, but she lacked Edwina's dazzling beauty. She was tall, where Edwina was tiny, and dark, where Edwina was fair. She also lacked Edwina's dazzling grace. Again, according to Colin, who, though recently arrived in London for the season, was a veritable font of knowledge and gossip, more than one gentleman had reported sore feet after a dance with Catherine Sheffield. The entire situation seemed a bit absurd to Antony. After all, who had ever heard of a girl requiring her sister's approval for a husband?
A father, yes. A brother, or even a mother. But a sister? It was unfathomable. And furthermore, it seemed odd that Edwina would look to Catherine for guidance when Catherine clearly did not know what she was about in matters of the ton. But Antony didn't particularly feel like searching out another suitable candidate to court, so he conveniently decided this simply meant that family was important to Edwina, and since family was all important to him, this was one more indication that she would make an excellent choice as a wife. So now it appeared that all he had to do was charm the sister. And how difficult could that be? "You'll have no trouble winning her over," Colin predicted, a confident smile lighting his face. "No trouble at all. A shy, aging spinster. She's probably never received attentions from such a man as you. She'll never know what hit her." "I don't want her to fall in love with me," Antony retorted. "I just want her to recommend me to her sister." "You can't fail," Colin said. "You simply can't fail. Trust me, I spent a few minutes in conversation with her earlier this evening, and she could not say enough about you." "Good." Antony pushed himself up off the wall and gazed out with an air of determination. "Now, where is she? I need you to introduce us." Colin scanned the room for a minute or so, then said, "Ah, there she is. She's coming this way, as a matter of fact. What a marvellous coincidence." Antony was coming to believe that nothing within 5 yards of his younger brother was ever a coincidence, but he followed his gaze nonetheless. "Which one is she?" "In the green," Colin said, motioning toward her with a barely perceptible nod of his chin. She was not at all what he'd expected, Antony realised, as he watched her pick her way through the crowds. She was certainly no ape-leading Amazon. It was only when compared to Edwina, who barely touched 5 feet, that she would appear so tall. In fact, Miss Catherine Sheffield was quite pleasant-looking, with thick, medium brown hair and dark eyes. Her skin was pale, her lips pink, and she held herself with an air of confidence he could not help but find attractive. She would certainly never be considered a diamond of the first water like her sister, but Antony didn't see why she shouldn't be able to find a husband of her own. Perhaps, after he married Edwina, he'd provide a dowry for her. It seemed the very least a man could do. Beside him, Colin strode forward, pushing through the crowd. "Miss Sheffield! Miss Sheffield!" Antony swept along in Colin's wake, mentally preparing himself to charm Edwina's older sister. An underappreciated spinster, was she? He'd have her eating out of his hand in no time. "Miss Sheffield," Colin was saying, "what a delight to see you again." She looked a bit perplexed, and Antony didn't blame her. Colin was making it sound as if they'd bumped into each other accidentally, when they all knew he'd trampled at least a half dozen people to reach her side. "And it's lovely to see you again as well, sir," she replied wryly. "And so unexpectedly soon after our last encounter." Antony smiled to himself. She had a sharper wit than he'd been led to believe. Colin grinned winningly, and Antony had the distinct and unsettling impression that his brother was up to something. "I can't explain why," Colin said to Miss Sheffield, "but it suddenly seemed imperative that I introduce you to my brother." She looked abruptly to Colin's right and stiffened as her gaze settled on Antony. In fact, she rather looked as if she'd just swallowed an antidote. This, Antony thought, was odd.
"How kind of you," Miss Sheffield murmured, between her teeth.
"Miss Sheffield," Colin continued brightly, motioning to Antony, "my brother Antony. Viscount Bridgerton. Antony, Miss Catherine Sheffield. I believe you made the acquaintance of her sister earlier this evening."
"Indeed," Antony said, becoming aware of an overwhelming desire, no, need, to strangle his brother.
Miss Sheffield bobbed a quick, awkward curtsy.
"Lord Bridgerton," she said, "it is an honour to make your acquaintance."
Colin made a noise that sounded suspiciously like a snort, or maybe a laugh, or maybe both. And Antony suddenly knew. One look at his brother's face should have given it all away. This was no shy, retiring, underappreciated spinster. And whatever she had said to Colin earlier that evening, it had contained no compliments about Anthony. Fratricide was legal in England, wasn't it? If not, it damn well should have been. Anthony belatedly realised that Miss Sheffield had held out her hand to him, as was only polite. He took it and brushed a light kiss across her gloved knuckles. "Miss Sheffield," he murmured unthinkingly, "you are as lovely as your sister." If she had seemed uncomfortable before, her bearing now turned downright hostile. And Anthony realised with a mental slap that he'd said exactly the wrong thing. Of course he should not have compared her to her sister. It was the one compliment she could never have believed.
"And you, Lord Bridgerton,"
she replied in a tone that could have frozen champagne,
"are almost as handsome as your brother."
Colin snorted again, only this time it sounded as if he were being strangled.
"Are you all right?" Miss Sheffield asked.
"He's fine," Anthony barked. She ignored him, keeping her attention on Colin.
"Are you certain?"
Colin nodded furiously.
"A tickle in my throat."
"Or perhaps a guilty conscience," Anthony suggested. Colin turned deliberately from his brother to Kate.
"I think I might need another glass of lemonade," he gasped.
"Or maybe," said Anthony, "something stronger. Hemlock, perhaps." Miss Sheffield clapped a hand over her mouth, presumably to stifle a burst of horrified laughter.
"Lemonade will do just fine," Colin returned smoothly.
"Would you like me to fetch you a glass?" she asked.
Anthony noticed that she'd already stepped out with one foot, looking for any excuse to flee. Colin shook his head.
"No, no, I'm quite capable. But I do believe I had reserved this next dance with you, Miss Sheffield."
"I shall not hold you to it," she said, with a wave of her hand.
"Oh, but I could not live with myself were I to leave you unattended," he replied.
Anthony could see Miss Sheffield growing worried at the devilish gleam in Colin's eye. He took a rather uncharitable pleasure in this. His reaction was, he knew, a touch out of proportion. But something about this Miss Catherine Sheffield sparked his temper and made him positively itch to do battle with her. And win. That much went without saying.
"Anthony," Colin said,
sounding so deucedly innocent and earnest that it was all Anthony could do not to kill him on the spot.
"You're not engaged for this dance, are you?"
Anthony said nothing, just glared at him.
"Good. Then you will dance with Miss Sheffield."
"I'm sure that's not necessary,"
the woman in question blurted out. Anthony glared at his brother, then for good measure at Miss Sheffield, who was looking at him as if he'd just despoiled 10 virgins in her presence.
"Oh, but it is," Colin
said with great drama, ignoring the optical daggers being hurled across their little threesome.
"I could never dream of abandoning a young lady in her hour of need. How," he shuddered, "ungentlemanly."
Anthony thought seriously about pursuing some ungentlemanly behaviour himself. Perhaps planting his fist in Colin's face.
"I assure you," Miss Sheffield said quickly, "that being left to my own devices would be far preferable to dance."
"Enough," Anthony thought savagely, "was really enough.
His own brother had already played him for a fool. He was not going to stand idly by while he was insulted by Edwina's sharp-tongued spinster sister." He laid a heavy hand on Miss Sheffield's arm and said,
"Allow me to prevent you from making a grievous mistake, Miss Sheffield."
She stiffened. How, he did not know. Her back was already ramrod straight.
"I beg your pardon," she said.
"I believe," he said smoothly, "that you were about to say something you would soon regret."
"No," she said, sounding deliberately thoughtful. "I don't think regrets were in my future."
"They will be,"
he said ominously, and then he grabbed her arm and practically dragged her onto the ballroom floor. Chapter 3. Viscount Bridgerton was also seen dancing with Miss Catherine Sheffield, elder sister to the fair Edwina,
This can only mean one thing, as it has not escaped the notice of this author, that the elder Miss Sheffield has been in much demand on the dance floor ever since the younger Miss Sheffield made her bizarre and unprecedented announcement at the Smythe Smith Music Hall last week. Whoever heard of a girl needing her sister's permission to choose a husband? And, perhaps more importantly, whoever decided that the words Smythe Smith and musical might be used in the same sentence? This author has attended one of these gatherings in the past and heard nothing that might ethically be termed music. Lady Whistledown's Society Papers, 22nd of April, 1814. There was really nothing she could do, Kate realised with dismay. He was a Viscount, and she was a mere nobody from Somerset, and they were both in the middle of a crowded ballroom. It didn't matter if she'd disliked him on sight. She had to dance with him.
"There is no need to drag me,"
she hissed. He made a great show of loosening his grip. Kate ground her teeth together and swore to herself that this man would never take her sister as his bride. His manner was too cold, too superior. He was, she thought a touch unfairly, too handsome as well, with velvety brown eyes that matched his hair to perfection. He was tall, certainly over 6 feet, although probably not by more than an inch, and his lips, while classically beautiful, Kate had studied enough art to regard herself qualified to make such a judgment, were tight at the corners, as if he did not know how to smile. "Now then," he said, once their feet began to move in the familiar steps, "suppose you tell me why you hate me." Kate trod on his foot. Lord, he was direct.
"I beg your pardon."
"There is no need to maim me, Miss Sheffield."
"It was an accident, I assure you."
And it was, even if she didn't really mind this particular example of her lack of grace. "Why," he mused, "do I find I have difficulty believing you?" Honesty, Kate quickly decided, would be her best strategy. If he could be direct, well then, so could she.
"Probably," she answered with a wicked smile, "because you know that had it occurred to me to step on your foot on purpose, I would have done so."
He threw back his head and laughed. It was not the reaction she'd been either expecting or hoping for. Come to think of it, she had no idea what sort of reaction she'd been hoping for, but this certainly wasn't what she'd been expecting.
"Will you stop, my lord?" she whispered urgently. "People are starting to stare."
"People started to stare 2 minutes ago," he returned. "It's not often a man such as I dances with a woman such as you." As barbs went, this one was well aimed, but sadly for him, also incorrect.
"Not true," she replied jauntily. "You are certainly not the first of Edwina's besotted idiots to attempt to gain her favour through me."
He grinned. "Not suitors, but idiots." She caught his gaze with hers and was surprised to find true mirth in his eyes.
"Surely you're not going to hand me such a delicious piece of bait as that, my lord."
"And yet you did not take it," he mused. Kate looked down to see if there was some way she might discreetly step on his foot again. "I have very thick boots, Miss Sheffield," he said. Her head snapped back up in surprise. One corner of his mouth curved up in a mockery of a smile. "And quick eyes as well."
"Apparently so. I shall have to watch my step around you, to be sure."
"My goodness," he drawled. "Was that a compliment? I might expire from the shock of it."
"If you'd like to consider that a compliment, I give you leave to do so," she said airily. "You're not likely to receive many more."
"You wound me, Miss Sheffield."
"Does that mean that your skin is not as thick as your boots?"
"Oh, not nearly." She felt herself laugh before she realised she was amused.
"That I find difficult to believe."
He waited for her smile to melt away, then said, "You did not answer my question. Why do you hate me?" A rush of air slipped through Kate's lips. She hadn't expected him to repeat the question. or at least she'd hoped that he would not.
"I do not hate you, my lord,"
she replied, choosing her words with great care.
"I do not even know you."
"Knowing is rarely a prerequisite for hating," he said softly, his eyes settling on hers with lethal steadiness. "Come now, Miss Sheffield, you don't seem a coward to me. Answer the question." Kate held silent for a full minute. It was true. She had not been predisposed to like the man. She certainly wasn't about to give her blessing to his courtship of Edwina. She didn't believe for one second that reformed rakes made the best husbands. She wasn't even sure that a rake could be properly reformed in the first place. But he might have been able to overcome her preconceptions. He could have been charming and sincere and straightforward, and been able to convince her that the stories about him in Whistledown were an exaggeration, that he was not the worst rogue London had seen since the turn of the century. He might have convinced her that he held to a code of honour, that he was a man of principles and honesty, if he hadn't gone and compared her to Edwina. For nothing could have been more obvious a lie. She knew she wasn't an antidote. Her face and form were pleasing enough. But there was simply no way she could be compared to Edwina in this measure and emerge as her equal. Edwina was truly a diamond of the first water, and Kate could never be more than average and unremarkable. And if this man was saying otherwise, then he had some ulterior motive, because it was obvious he wasn't blind. He could have offered her any other empty compliment, and she would have accepted it as a gentleman's polite conversation. She might have even been flattered, if his words had struck anywhere close to the truth. But to compare her to Edwina... Kate adored her sister. She truly did, and she knew better than anyone that Edwina's heart was as beautiful and radiant as her face. She didn't like to think herself jealous, but still, somehow the comparison stung right to the core.
"I do not hate you,"
she finally replied. Her eyes were trained on his chin, but she had no patience for cowardice, especially within herself, so she forced herself to meet his gaze when she added,
"But I find I cannot like you."
Something in his eyes told her that he appreciated her stark honesty. "And why is that?" he asked softly.
"May I be frank?"
His lips twitched. "Please do."
"You were dancing with me right now because you wish to court my sister. This does not bother me,"
she hastened to assure him.
"I am well used to receiving attentions from Edwina's suitors."
Her mind was clearly not on her feet. Antony pulled his foot out of the way of hers before she could injure him again. He noticed with interest that she was back to referring to them as suitors rather than idiots. "Please continue," he murmured.
"You are not the sort of man I would wish my sister to marry," she said simply.
Her manner was direct, and her intelligent brown eyes never left his.
"You are a rake. You are a rogue. You are, in fact, notorious for being both. I would not allow my sister within 10 feet of you."
"And yet," he said with a wicked little smile, "I waltzed with her earlier this evening."
"An act which shall not be repeated, I can assure you."
"And is it your place to decide Edwina's fate?"
"Edwina trusts my judgment," she said primly.
"I see," he said, in what he hoped was his most mysterious manner. "That is very interesting. I thought Edwina was an adult."
"Edwina is but 17 years old."
"And you are so ancient at, what, 20 years of age?"
21,
she bit off. "Ah, that makes you a veritable expert on men, and husbands in particular, especially since you have been married yourself, yes?"
"You know I am unwed," she ground out.
Antony stifled the urge to smile. Good Lord, but it was fun baiting the elder Miss Sheffield. "I think," he said, keeping his words slow and deliberate, "that you have found it relatively easy to manage most of the men who have come knocking on your sister's door. Is that true?" She kept her stony silence. "Is it?"
Finally, she gave him one curt nod.
"I thought so," he murmured. "You seem the sort who would."
She glared at him with such intensity that it was all he could do to keep from laughing. If he weren't dancing, he probably would have stroked his chin in an affectation of deep thought. But since his hands were otherwise engaged, he had to settle for a ponderous tilt of his head, combined with an arch raise of his eyebrows.
"But I also think," he added, "that you made a grave mistake when you thought to manage me."
Kate's lips were set in a grim, straight line, but she managed to say,
"I do not seek to manage you, Lord Bridgerton. I only seek to keep you away from my sister."
"Which just goes to show, Miss Sheffield, how very little you know of men, at least of the rakish, roguish variety."
He leaned in closer, letting his hot breath brush against her cheek. She shivered. He'd known she'd shiver. He smiled wickedly.
"There is very little we relish more than a challenge."
The music drew to a close, leaving them standing in the middle of the ballroom floor, facing one another. Antony took her arm, but before he led her back to the perimeter of the room, he put his lips very close to her ear and whispered,
"And you, Miss Sheffield, have issued to me a most delicious challenge."
Kate stepped on his foot, hard, enough to make him let out a small, decidedly unrakish, unroguish squeak. When he glared at her, though, she just shrugged and said,
"It was my only defence."
His eyes darkened.
"You, Miss Sheffield, are a menace."
"And you, Lord Bridgerton, need thicker boots."
His grasp tightened on her arm.
"Before I return you to the sanctuary of the chaperones and spinsters, there is one thing we need to make clear."
Kate held her breath. She did not like the hard tone of his voice.
"I am going to court your sister, and should I decide that she will make a suitable Lady Bridgerton, I will make her my wife."
Kate whipped her head up to face him, fire flashing in her eyes.
"And I suppose, then, that you think it is your place to decide Edwina's fate. Do not forget, my lord, that even if you decide she will make a suitable," she sneered the word, "Lady Bridgerton, she might choose otherwise."
He looked down at her with the confidence of a male who is never crossed.
"Should I decide to ask Edwina, she will not say no."
"Are you trying to tell me that no woman has ever been able to resist you?"
He did not answer, just raised one supercilious brow and let her draw her own conclusions. Kate wrenched her arm free and strode back to her stepmother, shaking with fury, resentment, and not a little bit of fear. Because she had an awful feeling that he did not lie, and if he really did turn out to be irresistible... Kate shuddered. She and Edwina were going to be in big, big trouble. The next afternoon was like any following a major ball. The Sheffields' drawing room was filled to bursting with flower bouquets, each one accompanied by a crisp white card bearing the name Edwina Sheffield. A simple Miss Sheffield would have sufficed, Kate thought with a grimace, but she supposed one couldn't really fault Edwina's suitors for wanting to make certain the flowers went to the correct Miss Sheffield. Not that anyone was likely to make a mistake on that measure. Floral arrangements generally went to Edwina. In fact, there was nothing general about it. Every bouquet that had arrived at the Sheffield residence in the last month had gone to Edwina. Kate liked to think she had the last laugh, however. Most of the flowers made Edwina sneeze, so they tended to end up in Kate's chamber anyway.
"You beautiful thing," she said, lovingly fingering a fine orchid. "I think you belong right on my bedstand. And you,"
she leaned forward and sniffed at a bouquet of perfect white roses,
"you will look smashing on my dressing table."
"Do you always talk to flowers?"
Kate whirled around at the sound of a deep male voice. Good heavens, it was Lord Bridgerton, looking sinfully handsome in a blue morning coat. What the devil was he doing here? No sense in not asking.
What the devil? She caught herself just in time. She would not let this man reduce her to cursing aloud, no matter how often she did it in her head. What are you doing here?
He raised a brow as he adjusted the huge bouquet of flowers he had tucked under his arm. Pink roses, she noted. Perfect buds. They were lovely. Simple and elegant. Exactly the sort of thing she'd choose for herself.
I believe it's customary for suitors to call upon young women, yes? He murmured. Or did I misplace my etiquette book?
I meant, Kate growled. How did you get in? No one alerted me to your arrival.
He cocked his head toward the hall.
The usual manner. I knocked on your front door.
Kate's look of irritation at his sarcasm did not prevent him from continuing with,
Amazingly enough, your butler answered. Then I gave him my card. He took a look at it and showed me to the drawing room. Much as I'd like to claim some sort of devious, underhanded subterfuge, he continued, maintaining a rather impressively supercilious tone. It was actually quite above board and straightforward.
Infernal butler, Kate muttered. He's supposed to see if we're at home before showing you in.
Maybe he had previous instructions that you would be at home for me under any circumstances.
She bristled.
I gave him no such instructions.
No, Lord Bridgerton said with a chuckle. I wouldn't have thought so.
And I know Edwina didn't.
He smiled.
Perhaps your mother?
Of course.
Mary,
she groaned, a world of accusation in the single word.
You call her by her given name?
He asked politely. She nodded.
She's actually my stepmother, although she's really all I know. She married my father when I was but three. I don't know why I still call her Mary.
She gave her head a little shake as her shoulders lifted into a perplexed shrug.
I just do.
His brown eyes remained fixed on her face, and she realized she'd just let this man, her nemesis really, into a small corner of her life. She felt the words, I'm sorry, bubbling on her tongue. A reflexive reaction, she supposed, for having spoken too freely. But she didn't want to apologize to this man for anything. So instead she just said,
Edwina is out, I'm afraid, so your visit was for nothing.
Oh, I don't know about that,
he replied. He grasped the bouquet of flowers, which had been tucked under his right arm, with his other hand, and as he brought it forward, Kate saw that it was not one massive bouquet, but three smaller ones.
This, he said, putting one of the bouquets down on a side table, is for Edwina. And this,
he did the same with the second,
is for your mother.
He was left with a single bouquet. Kate stood frozen with shock, unable to take her eyes off the perfect pink blooms. She knew what he had to be about, that the only reason he'd included her in the gesture was to impress Edwina. But blast it, no one had ever brought her flowers before, and she hadn't known until that very moment how badly she'd wanted someone to do so.
These, he said finally,
holding out the final arrangement of pink roses,
are for you.
Thank you,
she said hesitantly, taking them into her arms.
They're lovely.
She leaned down to sniff them, sighing with pleasure at the thick scent. Glancing back up, she added,
It was very thoughtful of you to think of Mary and me.
He nodded graciously.
It was my pleasure. I must confess, a suitor for my sister's hand once did the same for my mother, and I don't believe I've ever seen her more delighted.
Your mother or your sister?
He smiled at her pert question.
Both.
And what happened to this suitor?
Kate asked. Antony's grin turned devilish in the extreme.
He married my sister.
Don't think history is likely to repeat itself.
But, Kate coughed, not particularly wanting to be honest with him, but quite incapable of doing anything otherwise.
But the flowers are truly lovely, and it was a lovely gesture on your part.
She swallowed.
This wasn't easy for her.
And I do appreciate them.
He leaned forward slightly, his dark eyes positively melting. A kind sentence, he mused, and directed at me, no less. There now. That wasn't so difficult, was it? Kate went from bending lovingly over the flowers to standing uncomfortably straight in an instant.
You do seem to have a knack for saying the exact wrong thing.
Only where you're concerned, my dear Miss Sheffield. Other women, I assure you, hang on my every word.
So I've read, she muttered.
His eyes lit up. Is that where you've developed your opinions of me? Of course. The estimable Lady Whistledown. I should have known. Lud, I'd like to strangle the woman.
I find her rather intelligent and quite on the mark, Kate said primly.
You would, he returned.
Lord Bridgerton, Kate ground out, I'm sure you did not come calling to insult me. May I leave a message for Edwina for you?
I think not. I don't particularly trust that it would reach her unadulterated.
That was really too much. I would never stoop to interfering with another person's correspondence, Kate somehow managed to say.
Her entire body was shaking with rage, and if she'd been a less controlled sort of woman, her hands would surely have been wrapped around his throat.
How dare you imply otherwise?
When all is said and done, Miss Sheffield, he said with annoying calmness, I really don't know you very well. What I do know consists of your fervent avowals that I will never find myself within 10 feet of your sister's saintly presence. You tell me, would you feel confident to leave a note if you were me?
If you are attempting to gain my sister's favour through me, Kate replied icily, you are not doing a very good job of it.
I'm aware of that, he said. I really shouldn't provoke you. It's not very well done of me, is it? But I'm afraid I just can't help myself. He grinned roguishly and held up his hands in a helpless manner. What can I say? You do something to me, Miss Sheffield.
His smile, Kate realized with dismay, was truly a force to be reckoned with. She suddenly felt faint.
A seat. Yes, what she needed to do was sit down. Please have a seat, she said, waving at the blue damask sofa as she scrambled across the room to a chair.
She didn't particularly want him to linger, but she couldn't very well sit without offering him a seat as well, and her legs were starting to feel awfully wobbly. If the Viscount thought oddly of her sudden burst of politeness, he did not say anything. Instead, he removed a long black case off the sofa and placed it on a table, then sat down in its place.
Is that a musical instrument?
He queried, motioning to the case. Kate nodded.
A flute.
Do you play?
She shook her head, then cocked her head slightly and nodded.
I'm trying to learn. I took it up just this year.
He nodded in reply, and that, apparently, was to be the end of the subject, because he then politely asked,
When do you expect Edwina to return?
Not for at least an hour, I should think. Mr. Burbrook took her out for a ride in his curricle.
Nigel Burbrook?
He practically choked on the name.
Yes. Why?
The man has more hair than wit. A great deal more.
But he's going bald,
she couldn't resist pointing out. He grimaced.
And if that doesn't prove my point, I don't know what will.
Kate had reached much the same conclusion about Mr. Burbrook's intelligence, or lack thereof, but she said,
Isn't it considered bad form to insult one's fellow suitors?
Antony let out a little snort.
It wasn't an insult. It was the truth. He courted my sister last year, or tried to. Daphne did her best to discourage him. He's a nice enough fellow, I'll grant you that, but not someone you'd want building you a boat were you stranded on a desert island.
Kate had a strange and unwelcome image of the Viscount stranded on a desert island, clothes in tatters, skin kissed by the sun.
It left her feeling uncomfortably warm. Antony cocked his head, regarding her with a quizzical gaze. "I say, Miss Sheffield, are you feeling all right?"
"Fine," she practically barked. "Never better. You were saying?"
"You look a bit flushed." He leaned in, watching her closely. She really didn't look well. Kate fanned herself.
"It's a bit hot in here, don't you think?"
Antony shook his head slowly. "Not at all." She gazed longingly out the door.
"I wonder where Mary is."
"Are you expecting her?"
"It's unlike her to leave me unchaperoned for so long," she explained.
Unchaperoned? The ramifications were frightening. Antony had a sudden vision of being trapped into marriage with Miss Sheffield the Elder, and it made him break out in a cold sweat. Kate was so unlike any debutante he'd ever met that he'd quite forgotten that they even needed a chaperone. "Perhaps she's not aware I'm here," he said quickly.
"Yes, that must be it."
She sprang to her feet and crossed the room to the bell pull. Giving it a firm yank, she said,
"I'll just ring for someone to alert her. I'm sure she won't want to miss you."
"Good. Perhaps she can keep us company while we wait for your sister to return." Kate froze halfway back to her chair.
"You're planning to wait for Edwina?"
He shrugged, enjoying her discomfort. "I have no other plans for the afternoon."
"But she might be ours."
"An hour at most, I'm sure, and besides..." He cut himself off, noting the arrival of a maid in the doorway.
"You rang, miss?"
the maid queried.
"Yes, thank you, Annie,"
Kate replied.
"Would you please inform Mrs. Sheffield that we have a guest?"
The maid bobbed a curtsy and departed.
"I'm sure Mary will be down at any moment,"
Kate said, quite unable to stop tapping her foot.
"Any minute now. I'm sure of it."
He just smiled in that annoying manner, looking terribly relaxed and comfortable on the sofa. An awkward silence fell across the room. Kate offered him a tight smile. He just raised a brow in return.
"I'm sure she'll be here."
"Any minute now," he finished for her, sounding heartily amused. She sank back into her chair, trying not to grimace. She probably didn't succeed. Just then, a small commotion broke out in the hall. A few decidedly canine barks, followed by a high-pitched shriek of,
"Newton! Newton, stop that at once!"
"Newton?" the Viscount queried.
"My dog," Kate explained, sighing as she rose to her feet. "He doesn't..." "Newton!" "Get along with Mary very well, I'm afraid."
Kate moved to the door.
"Mary! Mary!"
Antony rose when Kate did, wincing as the dog let out three more ear-splitting barks, which were immediately followed by another terrified shriek from Mary.
"What is he?" he muttered. "A mastiff?"
It had to be a mastiff. Miss Sheffield the Elder seemed exactly the sort to keep a man-eating mastiff at her beck and call.
"No,"
Kate said, rushing out into the hall as Mary let out another shriek.
"He's a..."
But Antony missed her words. It didn't matter much anyway, because one second later, in trotted the most benign-looking corgi he'd ever seen, with thick caramel-coloured fur and a belly that almost dragged on the ground. Antony froze with surprise. This was the fearsome creature from the hall.
"Good day, dog,"
he said firmly. The dog stopped in its tracks, sat right down, and smiled.
Chapter 4. This author was, sadly, unable to determine all the details, but there was a considerable to-do Thursday last, near the Serpentine in Hyde Park, involving Viscount Bridgerton, Mr. Nigel Burbrook, both the Mrs. Sheffield, and an unnamed dog of indeterminate breed. This author was not an eyewitness, but all accounts seem to indicate that the unnamed dog emerged the victor. Lady Whistledown's Society Papers, 25th of April, 1814. Kate stumbled back into the drawing-room, knocking arms with Mary as they both squeezed through the doorway at the same time. Newton was seated happily in the middle of the room, shedding on the blue and white rug as he grinned up at the Viscount. "I think he likes you," Mary said, somewhat accusingly.
"He likes you too, Mary," Kate said. "The problem is that you don't like him. I'd like him better if he didn't try to accost me every time I come through the hall."
"I thought you said Mrs. Sheffield and the dog didn't get along," Lord Bridgerton said.
"They don't," Kate replied. "Well, they do. Oh, well, they don't and they do."
"That clears things up immeasurably," he murmured. Kate ignored his quiet sarcasm.
"Newton adores Mary," she explained. "But Mary doesn't adore Newton." "I'd adore him a bit more," Mary interrupted, "if he'd adore me a bit less." "So," Kate continued determinedly, "poor Newton regards Mary as something of a challenge. So when he sees her..."
She shrugged helplessly.
"Well, I'm afraid he simply adores her more."
As if on cue, the dog caught sight of Mary and bounded straight over to her feet.
"Kate!"
Mary exclaimed. Kate rushed to her stepmother's side, just as Newton rose on his hind legs and planted his front paws just above Mary's knees.
"Newton, down!" she scolded. "Bad dog! Bad dog!"
The dog sat back down with a little whine.
"Kate,"
Mary said, in an extremely no-nonsense voice, "that dog must be taken for a walk. Now..."
"I had been planning to when the Viscount arrived," Kate replied,
motioning to the man across the room. Really, it was remarkable the number of things she could blame on the insufferable man if she put her mind to it.
"Oh," Mary yelped, "I beg your pardon, my lord. How rude of me not to greet you."
"It is of no concern," he said smoothly. "You were a bit preoccupied upon your arrival."
"Yes," Mary grumbled, "that beastly dog. Oh, but where are my manners? May we offer you tea? Something to eat? It is so kind of you to call upon us."
"No, thank you. I've just been enjoying your daughter's invigorating company while I await Miss Edwina's arrival."
"Ah, yes," Mary answered. "Edwina's off with Mr. Burbrook, I believe. Isn't that so, Kate?"
Kate nodded stonily, not sure she liked being called invigorating.
"Do you know Mr. Burbrook, Lord Bridgerton?"
Mary asked. "Ah, yes," he said, with what Kate thought was fairly surprising reticence. "Yes, I do."
"I wasn't sure if I should have allowed Edwina to go off with him for a ride. Those curricles are terribly difficult to drive, aren't they?"
"I believe that Mr. Burbrook has a steady hand with his horses," Antony replied.
"Oh, good," Mary replied, letting out a much relieved sigh. "You have surely set my mind at rest."
Newton let out a staccato bark, simply to remind everyone of his presence.
"I had better find his lead and take him for a walk," Kate said hurriedly.
She certainly could use a bit of fresh air, and it would be nice to finally escape the Viscount's fiendish company.
"If you'll excuse me..." "But wait, Kate," Mary called out. "You cannot leave Lord Bridgerton here with me. I'm sure I'll bore him to tears."
Kate slowly turned around, dreading Mary's next words. "You could never bore me, Mrs. Sheffield," the Viscount said, debonair rake that he was.
"Oh, but I could," she assured him. "You've never been trapped in conversation with me for an hour, which is about how long it will be before Edwina returns."
Kate stared at her stepmother, her jaw actually hanging open with shock. What on earth did Mary think she was doing?
"Why don't you go with Kate to take Newton for a walk?" Mary suggested. "Oh, but I could never ask Lord Bridgerton to accompany me on a chore," Kate said quickly. "It would be beyond rudeness. And after all, he is our esteemed guest." "Don't be silly," Mary answered,
before the Viscount could get even half of a word in.
"I'm sure he wouldn't look upon it as a chore. Would you, my lord?"
"Of course not," he murmured, looking utterly sincere. But really, what else could he say?
"There, that settles it," Mary said, sounding inordinately pleased with herself. "And who knows? You may stumble across Edwina in your travels. Wouldn't that be convenient?"
"Indeed," Kate said under her breath. It would be lovely to be rid of the Viscount, but the last thing she wanted to do was deliver Edwina into his clutches. Her sister was still young and impressionable. What if she couldn't resist one of his smiles, or his glib tongue? Even Kate was willing to admit that Lord Bridgerton exuded considerable charm, and she didn't even like the man. Edwina, with her less suspicious nature, would surely be overwhelmed. She turned to the Viscount.
"You shouldn't feel you must accompany me while I walk Newton, my lord."
"I'd be delighted," he said with a wicked smile, and Kate had the distinct impression he was agreeing to go for the sole purpose of vexing her. "Besides," he continued, "as your mother said, we might see Edwina, and wouldn't that be a delightful coincidence?"
"Delightful," Kate returned flatly. "Just delightful." "Excellent," Mary said, clapping her hands together with joy. "I saw Newton's lead on the hall table. Here, I'll go and get it for you."
Anthony watched Mary leave, then turned to Kate and said, "That was very neatly done."
"I'll say," Kate muttered.
"Do you suppose," he whispered, leaning toward her, "that her matchmaking is directed toward Edwina or you?"
"Me?"
Kate all but croaked.
"Surely you jest."
Anthony rubbed his chin thoughtfully, gazing at the doorway through which Mary had just exited. "I'm not certain," he mused, but he closed his mouth upon hearing Mary's footsteps drawing back near.
"Here you are,"
Mary said, holding the lead out to Kate. Newton barked enthusiastically and drew back as if preparing to lunge at Mary, undoubtedly to shower her with all sorts of unpalatable love. But Kate kept a firm hold on his collar.
"Here,"
Mary quickly amended, handing the lead instead to Anthony.
"Why don't you give this to Kate? I'd rather not get too close."
Newton barked and gazed longingly at Mary, who inched farther away.
"You," Anthony said forcefully to the dog, "sit down and be quiet."
Much to Kate's surprise, Newton obeyed, settling his plump bottom onto the rug with almost comical alacrity.
"There,"
Anthony said, sounding rather pleased with himself. He held out the lead toward Kate.
"Shall you do the honours, or shall I?"
"Oh, go right ahead," she replied. "You seem to have such an affinity for canines."
"Clearly," he shot back, keeping his voice low so that Mary could not hear, "they are not so very different from women. Both breeds hang on my every word."
Kate stepped on his hand as he knelt to fasten the lead to Newton's collar.
"Oops," she said, rather insincerely. "I'm so sorry."
"Your tender solicitude quite unmans me,"
he returned, standing back up.
"I might break into tears."
Mary's head bobbed back and forth between Kate and Anthony. She couldn't hear what they were saying, but was clearly fascinated.
"Is something wrong?" she queried.
"Not at all,"
Anthony replied, just as Kate gave a firm
"No." "Good," Mary said briskly. "Then I'll see you to the door."
At Newton's enthusiastic bark, she added, "Then again, maybe not. I don't really want to get within 10 feet of that dog, but I'll wave you off."
"What would I do,"
Kate said to Mary as she passed her, "without you to wave me off?" Mary smiled slyly.
"I surely don't know, Kate. I surely don't know."
Which left Kate with a queasy feeling in her stomach and a vague suspicion that Lord Bridgerton might have been correct. Maybe Mary was playing matchmaker with more than just Edwina this time around. It was a horrifying thought. With Mary standing in the hall, Kate and Anthony exited out the doorway and headed west on Milner Street.
"I usually stay to the smaller streets and make my way up to Brompton Road," Kate explained,
thinking that he might not be very familiar with this area of town.
"Then take that to Hyde Park. But we can walk straight up Sloane Street if you prefer."
"Whatever you wish," he demurred. "I shall follow your direction."
"Very well,"
Kate replied, marching determinedly up Milner Street toward Lennox Gardens. Maybe if she kept her eyes ahead of her and moved briskly, he'd be discouraged from conversation. Her daily walks with Newton were supposed to be her time for personal reflection. She did not appreciate having to drag him along. Her strategy worked quite well for several minutes. They walked in silence all the way to the corner of Hans Crescent
and Brompton Road, and then he quite suddenly said, "My brother played us for fools last night." That stopped her in her tracks.
"I beg your pardon?"
"Do you know what he told me about you before he introduced us?" Kate stumbled a step before shaking her head. No. Newton hadn't stopped in his tracks, and he was tucking on the lead like mad. "He told me you couldn't say enough about me."
"Well," Kate stalled, "if one doesn't want to put too fine a point on it, that's not entirely untrue."
"He implied," Anthony added, "that you could not say enough good about me." She shouldn't have smiled.
"That's not true."
He probably shouldn't have smiled either, but Kate was glad he did. "I didn't think so," he replied. They turned up Brompton Road toward Knightsbridge and Hyde Park, and Kate asked,
"Why would he do such a thing?"
Anthony shot her a sideways look. "You don't have a brother, do you?"
"No, just Edwina, I'm afraid, and she's decidedly female."
"He did it," Anthony explained, "purely to torture me."
"A noble pursuit," Kate said under her breath.
"I heard that."
"I rather thought you would," she added.
"And I expect," he continued, "that he wanted to torture you as well."
"Me?"
she exclaimed.
"Why ever? What could I possibly have done to him?"
"You might have provoked him ever so slightly by denigrating his beloved brother," he suggested. Her brows arched.
"Beloved?"
"Much admired," he tried. She shook her head.
"That one doesn't wash either."
Anthony grinned. Miss Sheffield the elder, for all her annoyingly managing ways, did have an admirable wit. They'd reached Knightsbridge, so he took her arm as they crossed over the thoroughfare and took one of the smaller pathways that led to